People were told they're getting a safe, effective vaccine. Three words that are all a lie. Not safe, not effective, not a vaccine. But at least those of us who read the ingredients and said, oh my God, this isn't right. This is RNA. Why are we injecting genetic foreign material to have our body mass manufacture foreign proteins, specifically the toxic spike protein of the coronavirus? So the Pfizer and Moderna shots were supposed to contain messenger RNA encapsulated in pegylated nanoparticles. I mean, this stuff is crazy in and of itself. I would never inject that in anyone. I'd rather smoke a pack of cigarettes a day and cut a hand off than take one of these shots.
Hi, everyone. This is Veronica Kirilenko of The New American Magazine. During this past 2 years of mass immunizations against COVID, with over two-thirds of the world population receiving at least one dose, scientific evidence about these so-called vaccines has continued to evolve. And what scientists learn is not good news. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Mark Trozzi of the World Council for Health. Dr. Trozzi is one of the Canadian physicians whose well-established medical career has been ravaged over his stance on COVID policies. Dr. Trozzi, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, Veronica, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for all your great work that you and your team continue to do.
And you too, Doctor. There were numerous scientific revelations about the vaccines that are so damning that it's hard to believe that these shots are still on the market. Yet the researchers continue to find more incriminating evidence of the significant harm associated with the shots. One of the latest posts on your website is dedicated to the bacterial DNA content discovered in bivalent COVID shots from Pfizer and Moderna. Naturally, neither pharmaceutical companies nor governments have ever told us about that or what purpose it serves. So please shed some light on this shocking discovery.
Yeah, so thanks to Kevin McKernan for his research analyzing Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. So he's been sequencing them genetically to see what's in them. And then I also want to give a shout out to Dr. Michael Palmer and Dr. Gilthorpe. And Doctors for COVID Ethics for making sure this information got out. So as we know, I imagine your viewers know. So the Pfizer and Moderna shots, modern RNA, were supposed to contain messenger RNA encapsulated in pegylated nanoparticles. I mean, this stuff is crazy in and of itself. I would never inject that in anyone. I'd rather smoke a pack of cigarettes a day and cut a hand off than take one of these shots. But they were supposed to contain messenger RNA. And I sent a picture, maybe you could show it about this point, but just for people to understand, in the nucleus of our cells are our chromosomes, and our chromosomes are made of DNA. Within the nucleus of our cells, ribosomal nucleic acids, other little building blocks, are stitched together to copy the code off the DNA for a section of that DNA. And that creates what's called a messenger RNA. And that messenger RNA leaves the nucleus. So it takes the message of the genetic code for a protein that's being manufactured out of the nucleus to what are called ribosomes, which are the little cellular structures that manufacture our proteins. And the ribosome then translates that messenger RNA's message into the structure of a protein by stitching amino acids together. So that's basic genetics. DNA in our nucleus creates messenger RNA segments that are carried out to make the protein. Now, with Pfizer and Moderna, we were told that the injection contained inside these high-tech pegylated nanoparticles that go everywhere, even the brain, even the unborn baby. Again, very crazy stuff in and of itself. And carries there what was supposed to be messenger RNA, and specific messenger RNA of a patented sequence that they modified in an unusual way to make it hyper-persistent. But that sequence is for the patented version of the most toxic part of the coronavirus, which is the spike protein. And so this is what people were being told. You're being injected with basic, well, people were told they're getting a safe, effective vaccine. Three words that are all a lie. Not safe, not effective, not a vaccine. But at least those of us who read the ingredients and said, oh my God, this isn't right. This is RNA. Why are we injecting genetic foreign material to have our body mass manufacture foreign proteins, specifically the toxic spike protein of the coronavirus? But that's what we were told. Now, the process by which these RNA injections are made involves what are called DNA plasmids, circular loops of DNA, again, artificial loops that they made with various genetic sequences, including for their patented spike protein. And these are infected into bacteria, E. coli bacteria, and then those E. coli bacteria, as they reproduce, they end up making lots of copies of this DNA plasmid, this circular section of DNA. And that's how a lot of it is made. And then they take that DNA, they use a massive amount of DNA from these circular plasmids that they made to now manufacture a lot of RNA that they then encapsulate into the injections. So DNA plasmids infect E. coli bacteria. E. coli bacteria are grown in vats to produce lots, eventually, of those DNA sections. Those DNA sections are used to make the messenger RNAs that are then encapsulated and injected into people, which is a crazy thing to do in and of itself. Now, the European Medicines Agency stipulates, and it's a risky stipulation, but they stipulate that there can be a maximum of 0.033% DNA in the RNA shots. There's not supposed to be DNA in the RNA shots. Well, what Kevin McKernan and his team discovered is that 35% of the genetic content was not RNA, it was DNA, and it included completely intact copies of that plasmid, of that DNA plasmid, used to modify the E. coli to produce this stuff. This is a major revelation with like very concerning implications.
So the DNA accounts for up to 35% of the genetic materials in the shots, which exceeds the standard by roughly 1,000%, right? So there are
1,000 times.
1,000 times. Oh gosh. So there are the problems. Yeah. What are the problems with such a high presence of bacterial DNA? It does not benefit people much, does it?
Oh, no. This is terrible. I sent you a map of the plasmids that McKernan and his group found in these injections and the sequences these things contain. So first of all, it contains, of course, the genetic a DNA version of the genetic sequence for the patented poisonous spike protein. It also contains a sequence that encodes for a protein that will render the bacteria that are reproducing this plasmid resistant to a certain group of antibiotics. Then it includes a genetic sequence which induces the replication of the plasmid in the first place. Because remember, genetic material, always trying to get it to reproduce. So, mm-hmm. And then in the Pfizer, but not in the Moderna, it also contained what's called a simian virus 40. You hear a lot of it because it comes up in a lot of nefarious gain of function research, but this genetic sequence from the simian virus, and this is a sequence that can get human cells to incorporate plasmid DNA into the human chromosomes. Okay. Now people might say, well, I'm glad it's not in the Moderna one. Yeah, I'm glad it's not in the Moderna one either. But here's the thing. SV40 is in many people a latent infection. In other words, a lot of people have the SV40 virus in them anyways. And as well as a couple other latent viruses, which are in a similar family with latent infections. So that means that even people who got that, the Moderna rather than the Pfizer, they may still have that additional availability of the genetic sequence to stimulate human cells to incorporate this DNA plasmids in the human cells. And by that, I mean in a permanent sense.
So plasmin DNA persists, which may explain why vaccinated people produce spike protein for at least 2 months after the injection, as the studies show. Would you summarize the key risks associated with the prolonged production of spike protein?
Sure. So, you know, as we know, that when you look at the toxic effects of these misrepresented genetic injections, whether it's, you know, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson with the DNA, or Pfizer, Moderna with the RNA, the production of spike protein by human cells, that's the part where you get into the vast majority of the damage. Because first of all, that spike protein is a toxin. Second of all, if you calculate how many copies of that messenger RNA genetic sequence are in the injections, it's into the like tens of trillions per injection. So the spike protein is the main trigger of everything that goes wrong. The spike protein poisons the tissue. The spike protein spreads throughout the body, both where it's manufactured and where it adheres to ACE2 receptors everywhere. And there, not only is it a poison and a toxin of itself, but it attracts an autoimmune attack, where the immune system is now attacking cells that are covered and coated, or at least marked, with this foreign protein that shouldn't be there. And then, of course, that the production of mass production of antibodies against the spike protein is also what triggers many elements of the dysfunction of the immune system. It's what enhances the coronavirus infections, makes it more, coronaviruses more dangerous for these people, and also helps create the evolution of the variants through what's a process called antibody-mediated selection. So the spike protein is bad. You don't want spike protein. Even when you get a coronavirus infection, you know, you end up with some virus in your airway. You don't end up with it in your bloodstream. You don't end up with your body mass producing spike protein into your blood, into your heart, into your brain, into your baby before it's born. So spike protein's nasty. And the fact that these DNA plasmids can incorporate into human chromosomes, which we already knew there was a problem with reverse transcriptase. So this isn't like, oh no, the shots looked good, now they look bad. The shots just keep going from bad to worse. So these DNA plasmids are designed to infect E. coli bacteria. Well, E. coli bacteria live in our digestive tract. You know, humans are actually more bacteria than we are human cells by about 10 to 1. And a lot of that is in our gut. And E. coli is a major gut flora. So if these injections include intact DNA plasmids that by design infect E. coli and probably other bacteria, and turn those E. coli into spike protein manufacturers, well, what happens to the E. coli in the human gut? And if you take it one step or two steps further, what the implications of that could be. Another thing to recall, when I was describing earlier the manufacturing process, they reproduce the E. coli, and then they actually add the antibiotic that the plasmid makes the bacteria resistant to. So they wipe out all the bacteria that don't have the plasmid in it. Now, what happens if a human is injected with this? Their E. coli, some of their E. coli take up this plasmid, and their E. coli become spike protein factories in their own gut. And then to boot, they could throw in one of that class of antibiotic and wipe out the other E. coli. So the only E. coli people are left with is these plasmid infected spike protein producing E. coli. And then the other concerning implication of this is people actually exchange flora in the air. So I was speaking with some human biologists and saying, well, yeah, like actually people exhale some of their E. coli, and there's crossing of E. coli and other gut flora from one person to the other. Now that's somewhat news to me and I need to study it more, but consider that in the case of the injected and the uninjected, is it one more thing that you can get, even though you didn't submit to the injection? Can you end up with your gut flora also infected with their artificial plasmids and producing spike protein? All unknowns, all dangers, all reasons this thing should never be approved.
I understand many genetic diseases and mutations are generally hard, if not impossible, to treat, at least for the time being. There are several gene therapeutics I know here in the United States are approved, but usually doctors can only treat the symptoms of conditions caused by genetic mutations. Is it right?
Well, yeah, I mean, this creates a whole new level of challenge for those of us, working on how to treat the victims of these misrepresented injections, which is, you know, getting a thorn out of somebody's finger, that's pretty simple. You dig your way to it, you pull it out. Getting a toxin out of someone's system, like a spike protein, well, that's more complicated, but we've developed ways to do that. But getting a genetic modification out of a person's cells throughout their entire body, including their brain and ovaries and heart, and that's a whole other level of challenge. That's like turning a bull loose in a china shop and then asking the good doctors to come in and put everything back the way it belonged. It's a major problem. Doesn't mean that there's no hope, but one thing it implies is for a lot of people, you're going to be fighting this spike protein poison being produced in your body for a long time, perhaps for life. And you know, we have ways to deal with that. We've talked about intermittent fasting. We know ivermectin helps sequester spike protein. We have some natural things like pine needle tea, natokinase. You know, we have strategies, and more are coming, but this creates a whole other challenge. And then another thing is when DNA is incorporated into the human genome, that generally doesn't go very well because it disrupts the natural structure of the chromosome, and it can disrupt other genes. Like, you know, if you just go, it's like if you have a book and you just stitch another book somewhere randomly in the middle of it, kind of hard to read that book after and make sense of it. And same with if your body's trying to produce protein. And a lot of times that type of activity, you know, can lead to tumors and cancer, you know, especially leukemias, you know, when you have incorporation of genetic material into the human existing sequence.
Why especially leukemia? Why is it so special?
I'm not sure why leukemia ends up being the one. I mean, it probably has to do with the reproduction, I guess you'd say, of white blood cells, you know, having different characteristics, because leukemia is a cancer of white blood cells, but it can cause a variety of cancers. Just leukemia stands up as one of the cancers that is more common when you disrupt the genetic sequence at the site of where you integrate other chromosomal material. And that's one of the reasons that a lot of genetic therapies don't work. I mean, it's been a great idea. Yeah, you got a kid with an inborn error of metabolism. What if you could inject foreign genetic material to fix that? Problem is, you often disrupt other chromosomes in the process, and you can also often end up growing cancers and tumors. So there's pre-existing problems with that.
How concerned are you with potential genetic mutations caused by the contents of COVID jabs in reproductive cells, doctor?
Extremely. No question. I mean, we know that these pegylated nanoparticles have a high affinity for reproductive tissue. we're dealing with issues, for instance, of reverse transcriptase, you know, and we've demonstrated this in human liver cells and other experiments, which show, hey, some cells don't just read the messenger RNA, they reverse transcribe it. The transcription is the process of taking part of the DNA code and making it an RNA sequence. The reverse is basically taking something that's in RNA format and incorporating the DNA. So we already knew that was a problem. But now the fact that there's actually 35% content of DNA, including fully intact plasmids and including sequences that help incorporate that genetic sequence from the plasmid into the human genome. I mean, this can only be described as violence. I mean, this is a crime scene. It's been a crime scene for a long time, but this is just another level to the sort of evil genius of the injections.
Doctor, it is my understanding that all vaccines must be tested for genotoxicity or their ability to damage genes within a cell and cause mutations. How do you explain that mRNA vaccines, whose names literally say they are interacting with basic building blocks in our bodies, were not adequately tested to rule out any potential damage to our genes? What is known for a fact about the regulators' assessment of this crucial matter?
Well, that's a great question, Veronica. And this is something you can add to that mountain of paperwork where just how nefarious the interaction between big pharma, WHO, government regulators, FDA, Canada's regulators as well, just how nefarious all this has been. So regarding the issue of genotoxicity, the European Medical Agency's assessment report on the Pfizer supposedly messenger RNA vaccine that now turns out to be 35% DNA, I'm going to quote from that. It says no genotoxicity studies have been provided. In other words, Pfizer didn't give us any genotoxicity studies. Ah, no problem. Genetic therapy without studying the impact. What could go wrong? So it says no genotoxicity studies have been provided. And I continue to quote the European Medicines Agency. This is acceptable as the components of the vaccine formulation are lipids and RNA that are not expected to have genotoxic potential. So we already know that the RNA has genotoxic potential. We've been writing and discovering that for months, reverse transcription. But so they're saying, well, if we're going to ignore reverse transcription and a whole bunch of science and say, because it's RNA, there is no genotoxicity, go for it. And now it turns out that, well, yeah, actually it was 35% DNA. So it negates their whole already pathetic statement.
How about the FDA? How about the Canadian authorities? Have they said anything on this matter?
As far as I know, the FDA just no statement. And well, the Canadian authorities, the Canadian authorities have like the most efficient lie in the history of science. Three lies with just three words: safe, effective, vaccine. That's it. All of us saying otherwise, and there's hundreds of us, there's now thousands of us, really scientists and doctors, we're not part of their little deception club.
Doctor, you said we're at the crime scene, and I think we see the perpetrators with the blood on their hands. Do you expect them to be held accountable anytime soon?
Well, another great question. I pray every morning I wake up that I'm going to check the real journalism like yours and find out that there's been some serious arrests or action taken. I mean, it's the duty of the police, the judicial system, the military, and lawful militia to protect the people. And clearly, we have a lot of dead bodies, and we're clearly at a crime scene, in my very well-formed opinion of 2 years of studying this. In Canada, we're involved in a very important project right now, which is the National Citizens Inquiry. And we're about a month in and about a month to go. And we have four very qualified commissioners, and we have had 3-day full day hearings we're in our fourth city going, and I think there's a total of seven. I testified at the Toronto hearings, the evidentiary package that we're putting together. I mean, there was enough evidence a long time ago. I mean, just David Martin's patent searches covered that. But so that's what's happening now. How does that work? It's a tricky thing, because a lot of what we see now can only be described as illegitimate governance, illegitimate medical regulators. When a government is involved in crimes against humanity, even if they own they don't own, they spend the taxpayers' dollars on a propped up propaganda machine, which is, called the CBC in most of Canadian media. That doesn't change the fact of the truth. That doesn't change the fact that crimes are being committed. People are losing their lives. So we had a hearing a few months ago, which was a public hearing, and it was sort of run by the government, and it was a farce. And this was a hearing regarding Justin Trudeau invocating the Emergency Measures Act back during the Truckers Freedom Rally, when the most free, peaceful, loving, lawful rally in Canadian history that reduced the crime rate in the city. And it was just a beautiful thing. When Trudeau, rather than coming out to talk to people, he declared Emergency Measures Act, which is basically the War Measures Act, just reincarnated with a new name a few years back. And then we had, you know, foreign police with unmarked uniforms attacking protesters. We had women run over with horses. We had people's property seized, truckers' windows smashed in, people's bank accounts seized. We had $10 million that we Canadians had donated for this, stolen, essentially. So we had a public hearing. And after listening to day after day after day of testimony, which made it very clear that it was not justified to invoke the Emergency Measures Act. And then at the end, they declared, oh yeah, so it was all justified. It was all good. So that was another step in realizing that our courts and our government and our medical regulators and other institutions are no longer legitimate. This has happened in history before. Like, you know, there was a lot of lead in the cups in Rome at one point, and it was just not legitimate anymore. And so that's why we're having the National Citizens Inquiry. So this is a very organized thing being held by the citizens. And we're getting the truth on the table enough that anyone who is willing to have a look is left with no doubt, no doubt about the
COVID
crimes.
Will you publish
a
report of this inquiry? What will it be? How it will look like and when?
Well, you know, it's such a massive library. So at the end, our commissioners will put together a statement. But I highly recommend people dip into the library, nationalcitizensinquiry.ca. And even in other countries, like the Canadians right now are leading the way in creating one of the best expert and victim testimonial libraries that has ever been created. And this library is there for everybody. So I invite people to go to nationalcitizensinquiry.ca and start tapping in, support the movement. By the end of May, if I got my date right, we'll have wrapped up the hearings. Our commissioners will ponder it, but the Canadian people are pondering it. In fact, three of the coroners and embalmers who testified, and myself, we spoke to about 16,000 people online last night and just had a roundtable discussion. So the people will know the truth, and we're at a challenging point in history, which is, you know, government is by the people, for the people. And when a government goes so rogue and so criminal that the people become the victims of the government, we are faced with the challenge of what to do. And what to do is not to just lay down and die. So we're in some challenging times, but there's a lot of us working together. And I recommend everybody, doesn't matter where you're in the world, like, this is not a time to watch the show. This is a time to fight, because everything is on the line. And the more you study, the more you'll realize how violent all of this is against all of us.
Thank you for your integrity and for your fantastic work, Dr. Trozzi. Please tell us, what's the best way to follow you and your work and how to support you as a doctor?
Oh, thanks a lot. So I've been publishing on drtrozzi.org, drtrozzi.org. The library is quite extensive there. It's searchable. The written material is available in 23 languages. There's a lot of video material, which unfortunately is only available in English. Of course, I'm passionately part of the World Council for Health, and the World Council for Health.org is a great resource. One very exciting thing coming up is we're having our second Better Way conference in UK Bath. And actually, Veronica, I hope I'm not letting the cat out of the bag, that Veronica will be there. And actually, Veronica and I are hosting one of the expert panels together. I'm really excited about that.
Me too.
And the list of experts is incredible. I mean, everyone from scientists to lawyers, to Vandana Shiva, Tess Laurie. I mean, you could just, it's the Neil Oliver. It's just an amazing lineup. And I was at the Better Way conference last year, and it was like a little taste of heaven on earth, just loving, smart, intelligent people interacting. And the good news as well is, I mean, obviously we'd love to see people there in person, but we've made, the World Council for Health has made the online pass very affordable. And then you probably have a discount code on your site because you're one of the hosts. I have a discount code as well on my site, but for around, I think with the discount, it's around £30, which is around $40-$45. Attendance to the entire 3-day conference, all the expert panels. So what we're recommending people to do is get one of those passes, hold a Better Way conference party at your house, have all your friends over, everybody pitches in $5 and you've got the whole thing, and that'll help support the important work we're doing at the World Council for Health.
Yes. Thank you for sharing this information with our viewers, Dr. Strozzi. That was Dr. Mark Strozzi, everyone. Thank you so much for watching. I'm Veronica Kirilenko of The New American Magazine.